Ever find yourself like drowning in a sea of articles, you know, or each one claims to have the answer?
Right.
It makes you wonder, like, how do we actually know anything for sure?
Yeah.
Well, get ready to jump into the fascinating world of research methodology.
That's right.
Think of it as the ultimate BS detector. It helps us, you know, separate fact from fiction.
Yeah, it's the backbone of reliable knowledge. And in this age of information overload, it's more important than ever to understand how research works.
Totally. It's like having like a superpower, you
Yeah.
know, the ability to like actually assess information critically and like draw your own conclusions.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're going to unpack in this deep dive. We'll be your guides through some fascinating sources that that break down the why and how of this essential field.
We will. We'll uncover why a structured approach to research is so crucial.
Yeah.
And we'll also look at how this field has evolved over time.
Because let's face it, blindly following every headline or, you know, every single study we come across,
Yeah.
that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it's like trying to bake a cake with no recipe.
Ooh, I like that.
You might end up with something edible, but chances are it won't be pretty.
Right.
And you'll definitely miss out on that that delicious cake experience.
That's such a great analogy. So just like a recipe guides us in the kitchen, research methodology provides, you know, the structure, the steps to make sure our findings are sound, trustworthy. It's the difference between like a hunch and verifiable knowledge.
Exactly. And the fascinating thing is that this pursuit of reliable knowledge, it's deeply rooted in human history.
Really?
Even our early ancestors engaged in, rudimentary forms of research without even realizing it.
Oh, wow. You're reminding me of that incredible historical overview in the sources.
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing to see how far back this goes. I mean, figuring out how to make fire or like, you know, which plants were safe to eat, those
Right.
were life or death questions.
Absolutely. Those early
Yeah.
humans, observing their surroundings,
Right.
testing boundaries,
Yeah.
and then passing down their discoveries. That was
Incredible.
like their version of research.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes you realize that this drive to like understand the world around us, it's fundamentally human.
It is.
But it wasn't until the 17th century that things really started to like shift
Yeah.
toward a more formalized approach.
Exactly. That's when figures like Francis Bacon stepped onto the scene.
Right.
He revolutionized the way we think about knowledge. He advocated for observation and experimentation as the primary means of, uncovering truth.
Talk about a game changer. He essentially laid the foundation for the scientific method as we know it.
He did. And we can't forget about René Descartes
Of course not.
and his emphasis on analytical thinking.
Right.
His ideas about breaking down complex problems using logic and reason, those are incredibly influential.
Yeah. It's amazing to see how these philosophical ideas from like centuries
I
ago
know.
still shape how we do research today.
They do.
The key takeaway here is that research methodology has this incredible history,
It does.
and understanding that evolution highlights, you know, this crucial shift from relying on pure reasoning to embracing observation and experimentation.
It's a testament to the power of curiosity
Yeah.
and our constant desire to, to refine how we seek knowledge.
Yeah.
And speaking of refining,
Yes.
let's shift gears a bit
Okay.
and explore the essential components of this fascinating field.
Let's dive into the research toolkit. Our sources break down these elements beautifully, and it shows how each one plays, you know, a crucial role in ensuring rigorous and reliable findings. So we're thinking of research methodology as our toolkit. What's the first tool we need to pull out?
Well, first things first, right? You need a plan.
Okay, yeah.
And in research, that's your research design. It's the blueprint for your entire study.
Makes sense. And our sources dive into a few different design approaches, starting with experimental design. So I'm picturing, you know, scientists in lab coats carefully controlling every variable.
You're on the right track. Think of it like a classic drug trial. You
Okay.
have two groups, right?
Yeah.
One group gets the experimental drug, and the other gets a placebo.
Right.
And by carefully controlling, well, everything else, researchers can isolate the drug's effect and determine if it's actually effective or not.
So it's all about pinpointing cause and effect, but not all research involves like test tubes and controlled environments, right? Our sources also talk about observational studies, which sound like they're more about, you know, observing what's already happening in the real world.
Yeah, exactly. It's less about manipulating variables and more about carefully observing, documenting what's already occurring. And this is particularly useful in fields like sociology or animal behavior studies, where researchers really want to understand how things work in, you know, natural settings.
Yeah. It's like the difference between like studying animals in a zoo versus observing them in their natural habitat.
Right,
You
exactly.
get a much more like accurate understanding of their behavior that way. Our sources also distinguish between two other design approaches, cross-sectional and longitudinal studies.
Yeah. It's like the difference between a snapshot in a film.
Okay.
So a cross-sectional study, it captures data at a single point in time. It's like taking a picture, a group of people,
Right.
and then analyzing their characteristics at that moment.
Okay, and a longitudinal study is more like hitting record on a video camera
Exactly.
and following those same people over an extended period of time.
Precisely. This allows researchers to track changes and trends over time, which is incredibly valuable for understanding how things evolve.
Yeah.
Imagine studying a group of children as they grow up, or following the progression of a disease over, you know, several years.
Okay, that makes the difference crystal clear. So we've crafted our research design, our master plan. Now, how do we actually gather information?
Right.
Our sources delve into like the fascinating world of data collection methods.
And the method you choose, it really depends on the type of data you're after.
Okay.
So if you're interested in understanding people's, you know,
Yeah.
opinions or experiences on a large scale, surveys and questionnaires can be really powerful tools.
I can see how those would be useful for like reaching a large number of people relatively easily, but I imagine crafting like effective survey questions,
Yeah.
it's an art form in itself.
You hit the nail on the head. A poorly worded question, it can introduce bias or lead to inaccurate responses. So researchers spend a lot of time designing questions that are clear, unbiased, and truly capture the information they're seeking.
It's fascinating how much thought goes into those like seemingly simple questions. But sometimes you need to go beyond, you know, those checkboxes and really delve deeper into those individual experiences.
Yeah.
That's where I imagine like interviews and focus groups come into play.
Exactly. These methods provide those rich, nuanced insights that you can't always capture in a survey. Think about a researcher, you know, studying a rare illness. They might conduct in-depth interviews with patients to gain a deeper understanding of their experiences, their challenges.
Our sources actually use the example of ethnographic studies, which sound incredibly immersive.
They are. Ethnographic research involves, you know, spending extended periods living within a particular culture or community.
Wow.
Researchers immerse themselves in the daily lives of the people they study, observing their customs, rituals, and social interactions.
Wow. It's like the difference between like reading a book about a foreign country
Right.
versus actually traveling there yourself. You gain a much richer, more contextualized understanding by like being fully present. So we've covered a lot of ground here, designing our study, figuring out how to collect data. But realistically, we can't study every single person or subject in a given population, right?
Right. That's where sampling techniques come in. It's the art of choosing who will participate in your study to ensure that your findings are representative of the larger group you're interested in.
It's like choosing ingredients for a cake.
Okay.
You want a sample that accurately represents the flavor profile you're aiming for.
Exactly.
So how do researchers ensure their samples are truly representative?
One important technique is random sampling. It's like pulling names out of a hat. Everyone in the population has an equal chance of being selected, which helps, you know, minimize bias.
Yeah.
Imagine a researcher studying sleep patterns in a particular city.
Okay.
They might use random sampling to select participants from different neighborhoods, different age groups, and that ensures that their findings reflect the diversity of the city's population.
That makes sense, but I can see how random sampling might not always be feasible,
Right.
especially like with limited time or
Yeah.
resources.
Yeah.
Our sources mention convenience sampling as another option.
Yeah, convenience sampling is all about, well, convenience.
Okay.
It involves selecting participants who are readily available, like approaching people on a college campus
Yeah.
or sending out a survey to your social media followers. While it's, you know, quicker and easier, it might not always yield the most representative sample.
It's a trade-off, like most things in research. Our sources also mention stratified sampling, which sounds a bit more complex.
It can be. Stratified sampling comes into play when researchers want to make sure that their sample accurately reflects the proportions of different subgroups within a population. So let's say you're studying job satisfaction among nurses.
Okay.
And you want to make sure that your sample accurately reflects the proportion of nurses working in different specialties, like pediatrics, emergency care, geriatrics.
So you divide the entire nurse population into those subgroups.
Yeah.
And then, like, randomly select participants from each group in a way that, like, mirrors their actual representation in the workforce.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's like creating a miniature version of the larger population, ensuring that all the relevant subgroups are proportionally represented.
That makes a lot of sense. So we've got our research design. We've gathered our data from our carefully selected sample. What happens next? How do researchers make sense of all of this information?
That's where the real magic happens, data analysis. And the approach they take really depends on the type of data they've collected. We can think of it as two main categories, quantitative and qualitative analysis.
Quantitative, I'm hearing numbers, statistics, charts, and graphs.
You got it. Quantitative analysis is all about, you know, crunching numbers, looking for patterns, trends, and using statistical tests to determine if the findings are statistically significant.
So if you were studying the effectiveness of, like, a new teaching method, you might use quantitative analysis to compare test scores between students who are taught using the new method versus those who are taught, you know, using the traditional method.
Precisely. By analyzing the numerical data in this case, the test scores, researchers can determine if there's a statistically significant difference between the two groups, and then draw conclusions about the effectiveness of the new teaching method.
Okay, and qualitative analysis, I'm picturing words, themes, stories.
Exactly. Qualitative analysis focuses on understanding the why behind the numbers. It's about exploring themes, meanings, and experiences through, you know, interviews, focus groups, or even open-ended survey questions.
So instead of just looking at, like, test scores, you might analyze student interviews or their written reflections to understand how the new teaching method actually impacted their learning experience.
Absolutely. Qualitative analysis provides that that rich contextualized understanding that can really complement and enhance quantitative findings.
Our sources mention a few methods used in qualitative analysis, like thematic analysis.
Right.
What does that involve?
Imagine you have, like, stacks of interview transcripts from a study exploring people's experiences with, let's say, remote work.
Okay.
Thematic analysis is like piecing together a puzzle. Researchers carefully read through those transcripts.
Right.
Identifying recurring patterns, ideas, and themes. These themes might revolve around, you know, work-life balance, communication challenges, or the benefits of flexibility.
So it's about identifying those, like, common threads that weave through the data to reveal, like, larger patterns and insights.
Exactly. It's about finding meaning in the words and experiences shared by participants.
It sounds like both quantitative and qualitative analysis have their own strengths.
They do.
And can work together to provide a more complete understanding of a research question.
Absolutely. It's like having, you know, different lenses.
Mm.
Through which to view a complex issue. Quantitative analysis gives you the broad strokes, you know, the numbers, the trends.
Right, right.
While qualitative analysis, it adds the depth, the nuance, a deeper understanding of, like, the human experience behind those numbers.
I love that analogy. It's about seeing the whole picture, right?
Yeah.
Not just one aspect of it.
Exactly.
This deep dive has really, like, open my eyes to how much goes on behind the scenes in research.
Yeah.
It's like uncovering, like, the hidden machinery that drives our understanding of the world.
And understanding that machinery is so crucial for becoming, you know, more discerning consumers of information. When you understand the principles of research methodology, you're better equipped to spot, you know, flaws, biases, or even misleading claims.
Yeah, for sure. It's like having, like, x-ray vision for research.
Right.
So we've explored the why and the how of research methodology, but our sources kind of go a step further.
They do, yeah.
And offer a really practical roadmap.
Yeah.
For anyone who wants to embark on their own research journey.
It's a fantastic reminder that research isn't just confined to, you know, labs or academic journals.
Right.
Anyone with a curious mind and a willingness to learn can engage in meaningful inquiry.
So what's the first step for our, you know, budding researchers out there?
Well, it all starts with a question.
Okay.
What are you genuinely curious about?
Yeah.
What problem do you want to explore? It could be something related to your work, a hobby you're passionate about, or even, you know, a societal issue that keeps you up at night.
Once you've identified that, like, burning question, what's next? Our sources recommend diving into the, existing research through a thorough literature review.
It's like scouting the terrain before embarking on an expedition.
Yeah.
You want to know what's already been discovered, what methods have been used, and what gaps still exist in our, in our understanding.
So you're not like reinventing the wheel,
right?
But you're building upon the work that's come before you.
Exactly.
It's about like joining a conversation that's been ongoing.
Yeah.
And adding your own unique voice.
Yeah.
And insights.
Exactly. And that's what makes research so exciting. It's a collaborative endeavor.
Yeah.
That's constantly pushing the boundaries of human knowledge.
I love that. Our sources give some great tips on conducting a literature review.
They do.
Like using keywords to search databases,
yeah.
Exploring academic journals, and even reaching out to experts in the field.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to branch out. Sometimes the most unexpected connections, insights,
yeah.
emerge when you explore research from different disciplines.
It's like cross-pollinating ideas.
Yeah.
You know, a biologist might find inspiration in an economist's research, or a historian might uncover like surprising parallels in a study of modern social movements.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. Okay, so once you've like immersed yourself in the existing literature, it's time to choose the research methodology that best aligns with your research question and the type of data you need to collect.
It's back to our research toolkit.
Yes.
We've explored, a whole range of methods.
Yeah.
From experimental designs to surveys, interviews, and ethnographic studies.
And remember, there's no, like, one-size-fits-all approach.
Right.
The best method depends on the specific research question and the context in which you're working.
Oh, that's right.
It's about being adaptable, creative, but also rigorous in your approach.
Yes.
And, of course, meticulous in, like, collecting and analyzing your data. Our sources emphasize the importance of accuracy, transparency, and of course, ethical considerations throughout the entire research process.
Absolutely. It's about ensuring that your findings are trustworthy,
right.
Reliable, and that they contribute meaningfully to the ongoing conversation within your field.
And finally, once you've gathered, you've analyzed your data, it's time to share your discoveries with the world.
Exactly. Whether it's presenting at a local conference, writing a blog post, or even submitting your work to an academic journal, sharing your research allows others to learn from your insights and build upon your findings.
It's about contributing to that like collective pool of knowledge,
yeah.
and pushing the boundaries of human understanding.
That is.
So what does all this really mean, for our listeners?
Yeah.
Why should they care about research methodology?
Well, understanding these principles of research methodology, it's essential for navigating today's information-saturated world. It empowers you to think critically, evaluate information effectively, and really form your own informed opinions.
It's about recognizing that knowledge isn't static. It's constantly evolving as we ask new questions, explore new frontiers, and refine our methods for uncovering truth.
And who knows, maybe this deep dive has sparked a flame of curiosity.
Yeah.
In one of our listeners.
I hope so.
Perhaps they'll embark on their own research journey.
Mm.
And contribute to this incredible tapestry of human knowledge.
I love that image, a tapestry woven with threads of curiosity, rigor, and a shared desire to understand the world around us. Well, on that note, we've reached the end of our deep dive into the fascinating world of research methodology. Hopefully you're walking away with a newfound appreciation for the how and the why behind reliable knowledge. Until next time.